The History of the Holy Roman Empire, Charlemagne, Part 4, Consolidation of Charlemagne's Kingdom. Now, this will also be a little bit on the short side because I don't want to mix this in with the religion, which will be coming next, and ultimately fall of the combined Roman empires and the creation of the Holy Roman Empire. So let's look at the consolidation of Charlemagne's kingdom. Now, Charles began to concentrate on the building of new schools and churches. In 781 AD, Charlemagne returned to Rome, where Pope Hadrian crowned his sons, Louis and Pepin, as kings. It was at this time that Irene, regent for the emperor of Constantine VI, officially recognized Charlemagne as patrician of Rome, and therefore regent of the Western Roman Empire. But this momentous occasion was to be short-lived, for news of more Saxon rebellions reached Charlemagne's ears not long after. In 782, Charlemagne marched into Saxony to crush the rebellious Saxons, but his severity has drawn severe criticism throughout the ages. Over 4,500 Saxons were executed for treason in retaliation for the deaths of many nobles and counts, but the deed was revenged by the Saxon slaughter of many priests and nuns, as well as the burning of the churches which had recently been built. These atrocities made Charlemagne more determined than ever to drive the pagan spirit from the Saxons. For the next 2 decades, he would undertake at least 18 expeditions against the Saxon rebels and force the conversion of the vanquished. So harsh was Charlemagne that Alcuin, his prime minister, attempted to chastise him. Alcuin was born in Britain, where he was trained as the famed Cathedral School of York. Under the Archbishop of York, Alcuin became a celebrated teacher, deacon, and master of the school. In 780 AD, he had been sent to a diplomatic mission to Charlemagne, whom he befriended. Charlemagne soon asked Alcuin to become master of the School of the Palace, which was Charles's school for nobles and knights of his court. Over the next few decades, Alcuin would become Charlemagne's tutor as well as his friend. There can be observed a direct relationship between many of Charlemagne's theological stances from this time forward and those of Alcuin. There was, however, a major theological notion upon which they disagreed, and that was the conversion of the Saxons. Alcuin quietly chastised Charles for his brutal use of force in the converting of Saxons. He told the king that Christ must change their hearts. Education and evangelicalism was to be the tool of conversion, not the sword. In this, Charlemagne did not fully listen. Ideally, Charles may have agreed, but he was a politician as well as a Christian. The Saxons were not willing to allow freedom of the gospel except where compelled. How could the gospel be taught to the Saxon children if the ministers of the gospel were not free to do so? The real debate was over the severity of the law. Charles used fear to ensure that the Saxons would harm no church nor persecute missionaries. It is doubtful that he really believed that all those he forced to be baptized were true believers, but he knew that it put them in the church and under his dominion. They would be forced to obey and raise their children to learn the gospel, or they would suffer the consequences. To an extent, they were both right. Alcuin's views were biblical, but Charlemagne's were practical. From a political perspective, the old paganism was intolerant, and though Charles may be accused of equal intolerance, this would be an overstatement. Had the Saxons allowed Christian missions, they might well have expected to find as much freedom as Muslims and Jews enjoyed under him. But then the similarity of Islam and Judaism to Christianity may also have been a point in their favor. Christianity was once viewed as a Jewish sect and clearly arose from Judaism. Charlemagne had the deepest respect for them. Islam, too, shared a common root. It was once considered a Christian cult, and while a deviant and heretical sect, it had much in common with the Jews and Christians. Nevertheless, Charlemagne waged a full spiritual war with the temporal sword. The Saxons were forced to accept baptism and to obey Christian laws. Rebellions were crushed rigorously. In 782 and again in 785 AD, it appeared as if the Saxon problem had been solved, but it was not to be. In 782, the first Saxon capitulary was made. This agreement instituted many laws such as prohibitions against human sacrifice, cannibalism, burning of churches, and murdering priests. All these things were punishable by death, but critics have noted that equally punishable were the crimes such as praying to sacred trees, cremation of the dead, and even eating meat on Lent. An interesting law which indicates Charlemagne did not fall into the modern stereotype of the medieval man was the prohibition prohibition against burning those accused of being witches. Overall, the laws were an attempt to bring justice and morals to the pagan world, yet, in contrast to the currently held views that Charlemagne was wholly intolerant, certain pagan practices were still tolerated. There is a reason to believe that the practice of sacrificing animals continued, and burying of animals alive, kind of sacrifice, certainly continued. Despite this, the pagan Witkind stirred up another revolt as soon as Charlemagne's army had left the region. Charlemagne was again forced to return to Saxony. He set out not only to quell the rebels, but make life so miserable for the Saxon peasants that they would never again follow the rebels. Crops and fields were burned so that the Saxons might suffer through the winter with little food. By 785, even Windekin was ready to be acquiescent. Despite the pleas of many of Charlemagne's advisors, Charles showed great mercy to Windekin. The rebel general agreed to accept baptism, and Charlemagne made himself Windekin's godfather. This move showed again that Charlemagne could be amazingly merciful when he wished, and it is of interest to note that most Franks were offended by the mercy. Indeed, a conspiracy to assassinate Charlemagne was uncovered shortly after this time, and the conspirators were blinded and exiled. The last act of capitulation by Windekin would settle the Saxon problem, but temporarily. For a number of years, the Saxons appeared content, and Charlemagne was free to undertake expeditions elsewhere. In 787, Charles first began an engagement in expeditions in southern Italy, and in 788, he took Bavaria directly under his control while beginning expeditions into what was the Avar Empire. This included much of what is today Hungary and Austria. In addition, his expansion also served to create many of the Slavic states, which nominally accepted Charlemagne's authority and weakened the Avars. By the time of Pope Hadrian's death in 795, Charlemagne's kingdom stretched from the Atlantic Ocean to beyond the Rhine River. It took in what is today the northernmost part of Spain, all of France, Switzerland, Belgium, Netherlands, Germany, and the Czech Republic, part of Austria, Poland, Hungary, Slovakia, and Croatia. The only part of the once great Roman Empire that remained in Europe was Greece and Italy, of which Charlemagne was patrician. So we can see how he's expanded his empire, how he's been trying to deal with the Saxons. It's interesting to note that people were willing to assassinate him over his changes. But now we're going to get into the religious piece that's going to ultimately lead to him becoming the Holy Roman Emperor. Now the sources for this is Religion and the Holy Roman Empire by Ferguson, Before France and Germany by Gary, The Oxford History of Medieval Europe by Holmes, The Papal Encyclopedia by Bunsen, The Capetian Kings of France, 987 to 1328 by Butler and Adams, French History, Volume 1 by Guizot, Barbarian Invasions by Delbruck, Early Germans by Todd, and The Rise and Fall of the Holy Roman Empire by Criswell. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.